It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Well, good morning. That's not something we get to often say when we do Bar Down Breakdown. So this is your morning edition of Bar Down Breakdown. And I'm still drinking coffee. So is Mikey. And I'm sure our guest has probably crammed some down or is currently cramming some down. I don't know. But we've got Ian Reese.
Water for me.
Water for you. Good, man. That's probably way healthier than all of the beans that we're drinking. But we've got Ian here. Ian, esteemed member of Pure Noise Record. If you've ever bought a vinyl from Pure Noise Records, Ian has had his hand in it, whether it was flushing out variants or setting up pretty much anything that has to do with the vinyl game is Ian's thing. So also a hockey fan, so we're pumped to have him on. This is going to be a really cool one. So Ian, thank you for being with us. Appreciate you. How's your morning so far?
It's good. I mean, it's hardly morning for me. I've been up. I have a 3 and almost 4 year old daughter, so I've been up for a while. So, dad life.
Amen. I know all about that as well.
I was going to say, Mikey can attest to that for sure. Yeah. But cool. Yeah. So let's just kind of dive right in. So, I guess before we get into like all of the weird record questions that I'm going to have, and just out of curiosity, just because I think what you're doing is really super cool and aligns with one of my biggest passions and hobbies, but let's kind of rewind and talk about how you ended up getting to work with Pure Noise. So how did you end up getting set up with Jake and the boys and all that fun stuff?
Oh geez, how far back do you want to go? I've always I grew up in kind of punk rock. I grew up in an LA suburb, the small area called the South Bay, which I'm sure you heard Kyle talk about on a couple episodes back. Heavily influenced punk rock area, Pennywise, Black Flag, Circle Jerks, Descendants, all stem from there. But my dad, he's a super old punk rock guy. He still sings in a punk band to this day. He's 60 and it's called Neckbreaker. And
love it.
He's crazy. But punk music's kind of always been in my blood. And then I was in high school bands, and then my high school band I was in, this was about 98 99, ended up meeting like the guys from Finch when they were first starting out also.
Cool.
So we played few local shows with them, got to be good friends with them, ended up like kind of becoming like close with like the Drive-Through crew. I ended up touring with Finch and doing merch for them on like their first US tour, which was a big Drive-Through tour with the Movie Life, Something Corporate, Alistair, The Starting Line.
I think I actually remember that one.
RX Bandits. Mm-hmm. And then it got cut short because of 9/11. Because the Movie Life were the headliner, and they had a bunch of friends and family who are firefighters and whatnot. Yep. So, you know, that's kind of just like my backstory to this kind of music. From there, after that, I ended up playing in another local band and became good friends with guys like Jason from Let Live and Jonathan Vigil from The Ghost Inside. We all played local shows together, bar and grills and kind of stuff like that. And another band that we played with was this band Shot Blue, who their singer Jason, who's actually my best friend in the whole world, he's a manager now. He manages bands like Spirit Box is kind of his big band right now. But he was the first manager of No Bragging Rights. And so when No Bragging Rights first started getting linked up with Jake, that's kind of how I met Jake. And then, so when first Pure Noise very, very first began. And then I did, I've done like web and graphic design, and I was a freelancer and all kinds of stuff like that for a long time. So out of a necessity, Jake would, you know, throw projects my way. And this was when Pure Noise was based in like San Francisco. So, you know, just here and there, I'd do freelance projects, and then it eventually got a bit more serious as the label grew, as Story So Far got more popular, then signing State Champs and all that, you know, the label started to really take off. Mm-hmm. And then eventually Jake moved the label down back to the LA area. He's originally from kind of the LA area. And then at that point, he brought me in full time and kind of had me take over the duties of production and whatnot. So that's a
cool
quick Cliff Notes version of it.
Now, I want to hear like the parallels between like going out on that drive-through tour, like when it was at its peak,
mm-hmm.
and now like Pure Noise kind of being like the head honcho in this alternative scene. Like, are there any similarities, or is things like so different like 20 years later?
You know what? When I did that tour with Finch, I mean, What It Is to Burn hadn't even come out yet. I don't even think the first EP had came out yet. They had like just finished What It Is to Burn. And we were like listening to masters in the van, like getting sent like copies, like FedExed and stuff. Like there wasn't really email for that kind of stuff back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, also like the Starting Line, they were just a baby band. Like they had one EP out. I think they weren't even officially on Drive-Thru yet. They had put that EP out on We the People Records, a small Orange County label. So, I mean, Drive-Thru was like not what Drive-Thru ended up being yet, you know? It wasn't as poppin'. But you could kind of see it in its infancy. I don't know how it like ran like on a day-to-day level. Like I popped in they had a home office in the Valley. So I mean, I popped in there every now and then. I'd help like pack some orders in the garage or whatever, like real low level intern type stuff. So it's hard to like kind of say the parallels, you know. I think it's just such a different world from like then to now, like just how bands get discovered and
mm-hmm.
whatnot. Like back then, you really had to like put in a lot of work and you know, pay your dues and stuff like that for someone to really take notice. And now anyone who has a good song up on Spotify or Bandcamp or whatever, you know, they could barely play any shows and, you know, get signed.
So. Yeah. We've had this discourse on the show many a times talking about, you know, the differences between when Mikey and I were, you know, coming out of high school, 17, 18 years old, you know, around, you know, that kind of 2001 to 2005 era where like, you know, the only way that you got signed to like any sort of decent label was torn your ass off and, you know, doing the legwork and going out there. And, you know, nowadays really it's just all about, you know, how many monthly listeners do you have? How many streams do you have? You know, but it makes sense though. Right. Because, you know, you know, back in the day, you're talking about Drive-Thru specifically. Right. I mean, like, you know, like a small band, even like, let's talk about the Starting Line, right? You know, the Starting mm-hmm. Line were just, you know, a Philly pop punk band, you know, that happened to, you know, write some really great songs, get discovered, you know, and all of a sudden now they're on the other side of the country, you know, with drive-thru and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, but you got to tour your way out there. You got to pay your way out there and all this kind of stuff. So it definitely was a different time, but, but I think one of the most interesting things about, you know, like when I think about Pure Noise now, right, is how diverse they are, right? And that was something that I think, you know, maybe it wasn't the right thing to do, you know, back 20 years ago for a label like Drive Thru or even like a label like Vagrant. I mean, like you see it, like, you know, you saw it with labels like Equal Vision, how they kind of transformed from like a hardcore label, you know, with like, you know, Bane and 108 and all this stuff to bands like Saves the Day and going from there. Whereas Drive Thru,
they all kind of stayed in that same world though, you know, like,
yeah,
Saves the Day had hardcore leanings and
yeah,
so did, geez, who was on EVR way back in the day. I feel like everyone kind of like came from that scene, even like the more indie bands, like the more emo bands, you know, they have kind of all had those roots.
Agreed. And, but what I would say is Drive Thru specifically, you'd probably say that maybe with the exception of Finch, who were a little bit more aggressive, they really kind of stayed tight knit, right? With like kind of the pop punk sort of deal. I guess
for sure. Yeah, and even right. Finch's first album was a little bit more pop punk leaning. You know, there were a couple of times, you know, I don't know if this is out there or whatnot, but there's a couple of songs on there where, like, you know, Drive Thru told Finch, like, hey, we kind of want like a Saves the Day style song. Yeah. And that's where Stay With Me came from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's the poppiest song on the album.
Oh yeah.
You know, you can kind of see that. Like they're like, well, you know, we need something a little bit more in line with the rest of the label. And then I think you really saw like who Finch really was on their second album when they went more to the major side and kind of had not more freedom, but you know, they were just kind of able to be the band that they really were. I think that's a whole other discussion though.
That's really like one of the most divisive discussions, right? Talking about what it is to burn versus like Say Hello to Sunshine and like, you know, the real kind of poignant differences in those records, of which they're kind of enormous. But I, you know, one, like I said, kind of just to finish that thought, one of the things that I love so much about Pure Noise is how diverse they are as a record label. Right. So, I mean, you've got, you know, you've got your 4 year Strongs and your, you know, your State Champs and all that kind of stuff, but you've also got your Sharptooths and your Knocked Looses. And then you've got, you know, your Same Sides, and you've got, you know, Drug Church. So like, you've got all of this.
Got really ska bands.
You know, that too.
Grumpster, who we just announced, they're, you know, they're pop punk, but they're completely different kind of pop punk than, you know, the story so far.
State for Camps, sure.
You know, some of the other more pop like stuff we're known for.
But, so I think it's just so cool that, you know, record labels, you know, independent record labels are kind of in that vein now where they're not really as afraid to take chances. You know, they're like, look, we know this band is good. And, you know, even though, you know, just, you know, PN 195 was this 4 year Strong record, PN 196 can be this Knocked Loose EP. Like, and there's not a problem with that. So one of the things I really do love about Pure Noise is how diverse they are. And it's funny, you know, we'll get into it a little bit later, but you know, I collect records and I have like a spreadsheet that I keep of all the records I have because I'm a nerd, man. I'll
send you some goodies.
I'll defend that to the end of my days. But it's funny. I guess I didn't really realize it until, like, you know, so I usually keep my spreadsheet by artist, right? But, you know, I put label in there and all that fun stuff. So, you know, the other day I was just like, oh, let me just rearrange it by label and see what the enormity of what I have is. And it's actually Pure Noise. And it was kind of like interesting to see. Like, yeah. I guess I didn't realize it, but, you know, you guys have so many bands on the label that I love. So, kudos to that. So I kind of want to dive into some Pure Noise stuff just in terms of, you know, really the responsibilities and some of the things that you have there when it comes to vinyl releases. So I guess maybe short synopsis, because I'm sure there's a ton that you do, but regarding vinyl, like what, like, are you conceptualizing the variants? Are you, you know, are you working on album artwork? Are you working on like mastering these? Like what exactly are you focusing on in that space?
Yeah. Well, I don't do anything to do with like the mixing and their mastering or anything like that. That's
okay.
To people well above my pay grade. But basically once we get all the like completed elements of an album, the masters and then the mm-hmm. album artwork, I come up with all the variants. You know, we kind of decide how many variants we want to do. You know, we reach out to different retailers who want to take in different exclusives. We've been doing a lot with Newbury recently.
Yeah, for sure.
Revolver, Rock Sound, Rev HQ, and then you know, occasionally on way bigger titles like the new Census Fail album, like Urban Outfitters has a variant. So yeah, once we kind of have all those, and I'll start coming up with just however many variants my brain can think of based on kind of what the album art looks like. You know, I don't, since you have a lot of our records, I'm sure you can tell that at least with the first pressing, a lot of them, I try and keep real similar to the album artwork. I like to match mm-hmm. it as much as possible.
Yeah.
Occasionally, and you know, 8 out of 10 times, you know, we send it to the band and they're cool with it. You know, occasionally a band will have a specific variant they want or have a little bit more input. A lot of them tend to kind of trust my opinion on that, which, you know, I appreciate, but, you know, we're open to anything. I mean, there's so many different color combinations and variants and mm-hmm. there's just so much you can do with vinyl right now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it only keeps getting crazier, you know, different things pop up. So, yeah, once we have all the variants put together, I take, you know, occasionally sometimes we'll just get an album cover, and that'll be the only art we get. So I'll have to like build out the rest of the album packaging. That's not many times, but there's some stuff, trying to think something recently we did where I had to do that. But anyway, yeah, so then I'll get all the print files together. I'll communicate with the pressing company and get stuff ordered. And then I set up all the like pre-order kind of stuff with our various web stores that we have. We have 4 different web stores across the world. And then, but as a team, everyone kind of comes up with whatever the pre-order spread is going to be. And then bands always have, you know, their own input and stuff like that too. And, you know, bands always get final approval of what we end up putting out, but mm-hmm. that's kind of just the gist of that process. I mean, there yeah. is so much more involved, but
yeah, no, I'm sure there is, but, that's cool. I definitely want to get into like the kind of conceptualization of the variants and stuff in just a moment. But sure. One question that does kind of, you know, sort of pique my interest here is you were talking about, you know, all of the different, you know, kind of like brick and mortar or online places that you do exclusive variants with. Now, mm-hmm. is that something, even if it's not something that like you have a hand in negotiating, I'm not sure if you really have like some insight on how that works, but just as a point of curiosity, like, so, you know, let's say, you know, 2023, the story so far puts out a new record and we know they're enormous and, you know, a company like Urban Outfitters, you know, want their own variant. Like, how do those conversations typically go? And I mean, like, you know, you don't have to get too much into like the financial side of it, of course, but like, how does that work? Is there like some sort of exchange there? Or like, is it like, you know, if we do a variant for you, you have to buy all of the copies that you know, like kind of how does that work?
Well, I mean, with every retailer, it's kind of the same process. Okay. Some of them, it's a little more, you know, like Newbury, we've done so many with them that, you know, we have a direct contact with them and we just tell them like, hey, we got this new album that we're starting to work on. Like, would you be interested in exclusive. This is how many units, and they'll say yes or no. You know,
okay.
It's as simple as that. And sometimes they'll be like, "Ah, oh, we'll take a little less. Like, we'll do a little less," and then we go, "All right, you know, we can work with that." We try and make it so our web store variant is kind of like usually the most limited at any time. So that kind of like will define like the number that we can't go below.
Okay.
Like, you know, we want to keep this one the most exclusive. And then you know, the bigger ones like Urban Outfitters or like, we haven't done a Target exclusive vinyl yet, but they've taken in CDs for like the story so far, State Champs, Knock Loose, stuff like that. All of that generally filters through our distributor. We're distributed by The Orchard, and then they'll kind of reach out to people like some of those bigger accounts, and it's pretty much the same process. We just tell them like, this is, you know, what the minimum will be, and they'll come back and be like, you know, they'll take this many. And then from there, it's just, it's literally, they're just buying the records wholesale. You know, it's not like any crazy deals or anything like that. It's just like, we'll print them, and these are your records you have access to, and you know, you buy them as you need them.
So. Now you mentioned Newbury Comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's probably only a handful of those independent record stores left in the country. So like,
yeah, it's a dwindling number for sure.
Yeah, and it's sad to see. And then you mentioned like Targets and Urban Outfitters, and it's like, like, yes, that's enormous because they're everywhere. But at the same time, like, those kinds of places are what's also like hurting those independent record stores.
And yeah, that's you know, that's just kind of the way of the world. You know, it's unfortunate that it is that way. I mean, I grew up in record stores. You know, me and my dad, that was our Sunday thing. We would go to shout out Scooters Records in Hermosa Beach. That was our like main place to go. And such a cool, just like tiny little record store. It honestly wasn't much bigger than this room. And the guy who ran it, Tim, he knew all of his customers, you know, like there would be so many times I would just walk in and he'd be like, "What are you looking for?" I'm like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Oh, I got this. And he, you know, there was so many albums I discovered just because Tim was like, "Yo, you'll like this." Like, that's how I discovered like the first Against Me record, or like Lifetime, or you know, just a lot of stuff like that. So, you know, that's just like, it sucks that a lot of that stuff is like gone. And you know, that's just the world. You know, like, more people are shopping on Amazon and they want the convenience. They don't want to go to like the little record stores. Thankfully, you know, I live in Nashville now. So, you know, thankfully we got a couple cool little record stores that are still going, like Grimey's. They're super cool. Like the last Knock Loose album that came out, not this EP, but the full length, Knock Loose actually did an in-store set in there, which was bonkers. Like, you know, that they could only fit like 30 or 40 people or something, but it was crazy. Just like, so it's cool. There are like, there's generally like a good regional kind of store, like at least one in every major city. But yeah, that number used to be a lot bigger.
Yeah. I guess this is kind of like weird to say, but it's almost like, you know, so now that music is so easily accessible, right? So now that, you know, you could pay $9.99 a month and have like a Spotify premium or Apple Music account, it's almost counterintuitive to think that like vinyl is still so enormous, right? Like, because like you'd really think like in that line of thinking, like, yeah, no one's going to buy any physical releases. It's going to be like CDs where like, you know, people just are going to stream everything and that's the end of it. But you know, you look at like Adele, for instance, right? Like this, you know, the linchpin for why every single, pressing plant is 9 months behind. But I mean, she did what? Something like absurd, 500,000 copies, right? Of like her record on vinyl. And like,
and there was like, even, I think, who was it? Was it Lil Wayne or
Yeah.
Some hip hop artists did like a crazy amount of 7 inches just recently too.
And the crazy thing about it, right, is like, you know, 500,000 is enormous. It's completely enormous, but like Adele is selling those records. Like,
yeah, right? I mean, we'll see a lot of them on the shelves for a long time. But,
for sure. Yeah. But you know, I mean,
she does the numbers. So, I mean, it's not like a crazy amount, but there's definitely some padding on there.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But it's just like, just to think that, like, you know, an enormous pop artist like that is like, vinyl is a market that we need to corner, you know, where like, you know, and talking about the drive-through days, and Mikey can attest to this specifically. I mean, there was a time, probably like maybe 2006, 2007, maybe 2008, where like nobody gave a shit about records, and like drive-through had pressed records, right? Like that, like now, like if you have one of those in your arsenal, like you could probably sell them for like $400 or $500, but like they were sitting in Hot Topics in like the clearance bin for like $6. Like you could just pick up one of those newfound picture discs and you know,
I got the Movie Life picture disc, right? The clear one with the dice in it.
Yeah. Like Hot Topic would be like, hey man, we'll just like, if you want to take that, like as long as you're buying like at least a pin or something, like just take it. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, not knowing that like in 5 years from then, the industry would just flip on itself and become this enormous thing. And I think it's great. You know, I collect records mostly because, you know, I love having larger versions of album art. I love the whole idea of exclusive titles, exclusive variants. I love the fidelity. And just, you know, as like a 30-something-year-old person, like I just like love to throw on a record on a Saturday and just sit down and listen, you know, it's just, there's something about it. Right. Sure. And I think you'd agree with that, right? Like there's just like something intangible about it that people really love.
Yeah. It's funny. Cause you know, I think a lot of people, you know, the real people, like not the real people, but the people who are in it real deep, they'll try and like, oh, nothing sounds better than vinyl. And it's like, well, calm down. I mean, things do sound better than vinyl. I mean, I love vinyl, and I think it is a unique sound to a record. Mm-hmm. It can bring a different feeling to a record, you know, like you hear it for the first time on Spotify and you just kind of zone out. You don't pay attention, but then you hear it on, you know, vinyl, and you kind of just, it's a little bit warmer. You can kind of, you know, I don't know. I always like the pops and the cracks and, you know, just the imperfections, basically, you know, because it's a physical product, you know, not every copy is going to be 100% perfect. So, you know, and then also, you know, on my end of things, you know, I, you know, something that also looks cool on your turntable, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with a classic black record, you know, if that's all somebody has, that's what I'll buy. I mean, my favorite band in the world is Lucero. I don't know if you're familiar with them at all.
For sure, yeah.
But, you know, they press all their records, but oftentimes it's like, it's just on black vinyl. It's like, all right, I guess that's what I'm buying.
Yeah, and yeah. I agree with that. I mean, you know, so the fact that...
I want to step in real quick about that. Because when I was in the vinyl game, like the 180-gram black vinyl typically sounded the best. Like
it does, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So even though it wasn't like the flashiest, that is still...
You
like
know, the
what
weight
I usually went for.
The weight of it kind of prevents any warping, or, you know, not prevents it, but keeps it to a minimum. Like, no record's going to be 100% flat after it's like been shipped from like the Czech Republic across to the US and then sits in a warehouse and then gets shipped to customer via UPS and thrown out of a truck. You know, like, it's just like, not every record's going to be perfect, but a 180 gram black vinyl is going to do it, because, you know, colored vinyl brings its own other imperfections to it, you know, just the process of making those colors and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, occasionally you'll see it's gotten better, but I remember some, especially before I really got involved with Pure Noise, you know, there are some records you'd take out and there's like a dust on it almost, and you're like, what is this? And it's just, that's part of like the production process. And you know, they've eliminated that a lot, but it still does happen. So,
yeah, it's, I should have just brought it in here to show you. I ordered a record from Best Buy because I had a
I bought records from them too.
Yeah, except this time didn't go so well for me. It was I had like a reward certificate, so like and they just did a white repress of Saves the Days Ups and Downs. So I was let me grab it.
Yeah.
And of course it got to me like pretty much bent in half, like
I've seen some of those nightmare stories on like Vinyl Collective, and I'm just like, how does that even happen? I've seen like mailers come just like,
oh yeah, I'm literally like, and my wife like it got delivered to the door, and my wife's like, hey, when you get home from work, make sure you take a look at this because it looks like it's bent in half. And I shook it and I can hear pieces. And I was like, excellent. But luckily, I mean, you know, a lot of these, you know, online retailers and stuff, they're kind of good with that stuff. They're like, either out, take a picture, or like, oh, just return it and we'll give you your money back. Like, you know, it's kind of a nightmare there. But
so many customers that they don't want to like deal with the hassle, like, oh, send it back. We got to see it and prove it. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, whatever, here, we'll send out a new one.
Well, so I've bought from Pure Noise enough to know that Pure Noise, you guys use Root, right? For like your protection there. I think it's $1. Yeah,
it's just kind of like a built-in thing in Shopify. Like, I don't even know if you can turn it off in Shopify, to be honest. But
I think you can, but I usually just keep it on.
I mean, in the back end, like from a retailer standpoint. But yeah, it seems like enough people use it. I don't think I've ever placed an order and kept it on, but you've used it and it's like,
it's
care of damages.
It's one of those peace of mind sort of deals. And it's literally like an extra dollar. So it doesn't, you know, if I'm buying two or three records from you guys, like I'm not going to, you know,
I definitely had people complain about it. Like I turned it off and then it did turn back on.
Yeah. It's like, if you're really, it go away, it's like, you're really going to freak out about like 98 cents, like, you know, chill out. But
what's funny is, we don't run our web store, you know, like Merch Now runs our web store. So like, you know, people will come to me all the time and I'm just like, well, I'll point you in the right direction, but I'm not actually like in there shipping out your order. Sorry to disappoint you.
And then you were talking about 180 gram records, Mikey. I just had to bring up, I just bought a couple of Murder by Death records and they're doing them like 200 gram.
Wow. How much are they charging for that?
It wasn't too bad. I think I got I don't know if you're a Murder by Death fan, but I got in Boca Lupo and I forget the one after that. But I think I want to say like maybe 24, 25 bucks.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah, single LP. I mean, you know, not crazy, so it definitely works, but super cool. So one last question. You know, I just want to touch on some of this vinyl stuff, and then we'll do our fun little DraftKings read, and then we'll get into fun hockey talk. But conceptualizing these variants. So I know that you said, you know, you're typically trying to work within the color schemes of the album art and all that kind of stuff, which I think is super cool. But like, so what I'm going to do here is I have my little vinyl spreadsheet up, and I'm just going to call out some variants, and like if you could just kind of tell me a little bit about them just because of how cool they are. So the first one I want to hit on, which I think is such a cool thing, and I'd love to know how this really works, but Brain Pain. Mm-hmm. You have the glow in the dark variants on that, and also the new Drug Church variant that I'm getting is going to be glow in the dark as well. So
nice.
How the hell do you make a glow in the dark record?
Like how do we make it, or how do we decide we want to do one, or
I guess like really for this question, like how does it work? Like how, like
how the, does it work? Like how is it pressed?
Yeah, exactly.
so they're glow in the darks are tricky because, you know, they're using, they're basically putting a powder. They're mixing a powder in with the wax or the vinyl or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And it only works on, it has to like, I actually like learned all of this recently because we were trying to do some like crazy glow in the darks and the pressing plant was like, that's not going to work. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. So it has to react with, a color or like, it has to basically react in with the wax a certain way. So that's why you kind of only see it on a opaque stuff. It won't work. It has to be a transparent vinyl. And then the vinyl itself also has to be light enough for the glow to actually work. So that's why you see it on mainly a clear or a milky clear.
Got it.
We typically like to go with the milky clear instead of a pure clear. No real rhyme or reason there. Just that's our preference usually. I feel like the green kind of glows a little bit better with it. And that's another thing too, is because it actually has a little bit of color in it, as opposed to the clear is just a pure clear. So the glow isn't going to be as bright when it happens. So I mean, that's just basically how that works. There are a couple, they've been out of it for a while, so I think it's like because of COVID, just certain manufacturing processes, they haven't been able to get them. But you always see like a green glow in the dark basically, but there's also a red one and a blue one that you can do.
Oh wow.
Like they've been out of them for a while. Like we wanted to do a red one with the new Knock Loose EP, but they don't have it. So
have it, no, I mean, it really is super cool. And then one of the other ones,
sound the greatest, but it looks super cool.
Yeah. One of the other ones that I think you guys like absolutely knocked it out of the park with, is the pressings that you did for, the Spill Canvases Conduit. I mean, the one I have, the double mint with the purple and the yellow twist.
The twist,
It's so cool looking. But so I guess the question I have there is like, this is not as much of a pressing question as much as like a conception question. But so when you go into talking about these variants, like, you know, so you know, obviously looking at the cover of Conduit, you know, you're hitting the purple, the yellow, the green, which is awesome. But like, how do you decide, like, oh, we want to do like a butterfly or a pinwheel or a twist? Like, does that feed off of like what you see in the album art itself? Or are you just like, oh, sometimes, like this is a cool thing we can kind of do. So like, how does that conceptualization happen?
I mean, sometimes it does. You know, we got kind of our bread and butter variants, like, you'll almost always see an A side, B side, and then a splatter of some sort. But you know, there's some albums that just kind of don't lend to visually harsher variants. I don't know how to explain it. Like sometimes I'll just look at an album cover or like listen to the album, and I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me to do like a splatter here. Like, cause I just, there is a little bit of that where it's like trying to fit just like the general mood of the whole album. In the case of the Spill Canvas one, you know, that was kind of like, the cover art was super cool and like tons of colors to play with, you know, like we get a lot of these, like, you know, hardcore bands or whatever, like, it's just like, this is black and white album art. And it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm doing mostly black and white and grays, but you know, try and throw in a little bit of red for contrast or whatever. Occasionally we will do different and just go off the board. But yeah, in the case of the Spill Canvas one, that was like, I'm looking at it right now. We did a lot of splatters for that. I don't even really know. I mean, I like the twist variant a lot. And there was a while where it wasn't really advertised as a variant that you could order. So for a while, we were kind of like the only ones doing it. So I really like that. And then, like I said, the A side, B side, we'll almost always try and do one of those. And then, you know, another big one that we've kind of, you see more and more in our newer albums is like a color in a color with a splatter. I just like the way those look. So yeah, I mean, the variants themselves, I mean, you know, on smaller records where we're doing like 3 to 5 variants or something, it's a little easier to like be like, all right, these are our cool ones that we like to always do. These are what we know sell. Like, that's another factor in it, you know, like some stuff just people are like, ah, that's whatever, it's fine. It's a half and half, or, you know, it's not that visually striking. Because I mean, you know, there is an element of like how cool is this going to look on social media? You know, are people going to show this off? Like, there is an element of that, obviously.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. But, you know, when we start getting into, like, bigger albums, like the new Knock Loose or, you know, like a Story So Far album or State Champs album where we're doing, like, or Census Fail, we're doing 10 to 13 variants. You're just like, you get to a point where you're just like, all right, well, we'll do one of that one and that one, one of that one. Just because it's like we have to do something.
Yeah.
So then it's just, you know, working with the colors in your palette kind of, and sometimes going off the board, but keeping it fairly contrasting. So
awesome. Now, hold on. Before we shift into the hockey talk, and this is kind of related, you know, there's a few known hockey fans who are on Pure Noise Records that we've had on this show.
Yep.
Have any bands come to you and been like, yo, I want to do a Dallas Stars color variant for the State Champs record, or I want to do a Toronto Maple Leafs variant for the New Barons record, or like any of that ever come into the conversation? And like,
you know, not specifically, but like, there are people that like, because I'm such a big hockey fan and like, so is Jake and stuff. And obviously I know what people in our bands like which teams. So there have been times where I'm like, yo, let's do this. Like, you know, the Story So Far, obviously Kellen is a big Sharks fan. Blue Sharks. But yeah, there was like on the Out of It 7-inch, I think it was one of the color schemes I wanted to do. That it was just, it was I think it was a teal and orange, and it was like, yo, I want to do that. Like, these are kind of similar to the Sharks colors. And I don't know, I can't remember if that one actually happened or not, but there have been times where I've thrown it out there, like, you know, I know you guys are like, or someone is a fan of this team. So like Seaway Bearings, we haven't done specifically Maple Leafs colors. I'm trying to think. State Champs, Derek hasn't specifically said anything about like Dallas Stars covers, but I do want to do like a neon green and black, like based off of that, their like retro reverse they had.
Hell yeah. I mean, like in my head with this, like, this is such a golden opportunity to like create like a series of like 7-inches that are just all like hockey variant themed.
Yeah.
And just make like, I don't know, like 700 of each, and just be like, once they're gone, they're gone. And then like just the entire Pure Noise roster just has like, oh, check out like, you know, Seaways Leafs, you know, fucking
sounds like a nightmare. Or, like,
yeah. Well, I mean, you would know way better than me. Yeah, I know. But it
is super cool. And I would love to do something like that. Maybe Black Friday next year. But I mean, just with the way the vinyl pressing world is right now, it's just like, doing any like a project of that scope is just like, there's no guarantee we'd even have it by Black Friday next year.
Yeah, I was gonna say like we could announce that now, but by the time they come out, the NHL will have probably already folded or some shit in 2045. Cool, man. I like I said, I could sit here and ask you questions.
Yeah, I can't think of any like particular really team variant ones we've done. I mean, that Brain Pain album, we didn't do a team variant, but we did that Boston Bruins ripoff with the Violent Gentlemen collab.
That was cool.
And then the last Seaway album, we tried to do like a Maple Leafs, like a ripoff jersey collab, but then we went more like with like a Team Canada ish, but with like the big vibe colors. That's like how those colors came out for that jersey. But yeah, when we were originally talking about it, it was like a little bit more Maple Leafs themed because they're big Maple Leafs fans.
Hell yeah, man. Awesome. So let's take a quick break. We'll go ahead and just talk a little bit about our sponsor, DraftKings, and then we will get right back into some hockey talk. So, you know, we are a hockey podcast, but you know, sometimes we got to shift it over to our NFL homies and, you know, for right now, they've got a really great great deal going on with the NFL. So as the NFL is kind of jumping into their, I guess, last third of their regular season, You know, we're all loving those action-packed, high-scoring NFL games, and it's a no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, of course, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. You'll be a winner if there's a single point scored. I mean, it's crazy. Literally, you bet on a game, it could be 3-0, it could be 2-0, it could be just a safety, and you're going to be a winner. So new customers who bet just $1 on any team to score, any team, can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. It's super cool. So if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. And DraftKings, of course, has given all of their new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with just their first deposit. So if you haven't done so yet, jump on it. You download that DraftKings Sportsbook app now. You're going to use promo code THPN, the Hockey Podcast Network, THPN. $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. So, I mean, it's the no-brainer. I mean, I don't remember the last time an NFL game was 0-0. So you're guaranteed to win $100 in free bets. It's fucking great. So if they score, you score. And again, use promo code THPN. That's at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. And do remember, you got to be 21 years or older. New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. $1 wager is required. One per customer, and restrictions do apply. So see DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, just call 1-800-GAMBLER, and they'll sort you out. And that's all I got.
Dude, love that you could drag out a 30-second ad with enough time for me to run downstairs and fill my coffee.
See, I knew you needed something, so I had to. What are you drinking? What coffee are you drinking right now? I'm just curious.
Just black Aldi coffee.
Aldi coffee, dude. You gotta get yourself some Rootless coffee, man. I'm telling you, some of the best coffee out there.
I'm not a coffee snob. I've already told you this time.
All right, well, you know, I'm gonna get Jono on the line, and he's gonna get you some Rootless. You're gonna enjoy it. Trust me. So
I actually don't like strong, like craft coffee. I it's not for me.
You just like Folgers in your cup?
I could get down with Folgers.
Just dirty.
We got a
dirty
new Pure Noise holiday blend.
Ooh, see? Yeah. Dude.
There you go.
Is it with Legal Speed?
No, it's with Anchorhead, I think.
Okay.
I love that.
I don't drink coffee, so.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
God bless you, man. I don't know how I could live without having a cup of coffee in the morning. It's like,
oh man, my wife, she loves her coffee, but I don't know.
It's a definite dependence. Like, it's like a sad thing to say out loud, but like, it's something I'm dependent on. Like, if I don't have a cup of coffee in the morning by like noon, I'll have a headache.
Oh, positively. I've seen it.
It's brutal. But on that note, talking about headaches, the Islanders have only scored 33 goals this whole season. So that's a headache for me. It's not good. Makes
that
me not
like
want to watch
than
hockey.
The Kings, though.
No, unfortunately it's not.
Is it the black? Is it? I think there was only one other team, and it was like the Coyotes at that time.
Yeah, but the Coyotes, I think, have like 40 goals, so we're the worst in the league. That's okay though. Sometimes, sometimes you got to be bad before you're good. But let's get into some hockey talk, man. So, just because I don't know, and I probably should have done my research, but what are we looking? We're Kings fan?
Yep. Diehard Kings fan. Excellent. Have been since mid-80s. Not early 80s. I was born in the early 80s. Okay. But, my dad, he took me to games at the Forum before Gretzky even got traded to LA. So, shout out Luke Robitaille.
Yeah, Luke Robitaille. And, hell yeah.
Yeah, he's always been my favorite. And, so I've been a Kings fan through thick and thin, a lot of thin. we had a few glory years, but now we're back in the thin, but seems like we're coming out of it soon.
So I guess this is sort of like probably a bit of a divisive topic, but as far as like West Coast hockey in general is concerned, would you say that like when the Gretzky trade happened, it like sort of legitimized West Coast hockey? Or do you think that like it had its roots and Gretzky just coming over really sort of like padded it, or what's your thought process on that?
There was a huge boom after the Gretzky trade. I mean, hockey in LA was a very, very niche thing, Like it had it did fine. I think I can't say like, you know, what their attendance was like. I don't think they're ever at risk of moving or anything, because there's so many well, at least back then, but there were always so many like Canadian transplants or East Coast transplants that, you know, most of the time you'd always have people at games. And I mean, it's still to this day, it's just how LA is. Like, you know, very few people are actually from LA. So, you know, you'd go to a Red Wings game and it'd just be packed with Red Wings fans, or a Rangers game, or, you know, Canadians or Maple Leafs or Vancouver or whatever, you know. So LA is kind of always done fine, but basically it's just like their arena will be full of other fans. But yeah, there is a huge boom after the Gretzky trade. You know, street hockey got real popular in LA, just because at the time there were so few ice rinks there. Now there are a ton of ice rinks in LA. Like, there are so many. And so that, and then also, hate to say it, but the Mighty Ducks movies too. Like, those, you know, those two things, like, you know, how far apart did those happen? 5 years, or I don't know, something like that. So in that time span, you know, hockey really, really grew in LA, you know, to the point where now you're seeing there are a handful of players that are from, born and bred in LA in the NHL. So
now I guess staying on the topic of Gretzky, you know, he never really got it done for the Kings. And I guess some would even argue that when he was playing for the Kings, it was like a little after his like heyday. So,
well,
like,
I mean, you know, he never put up the crazy, well, he had some crazy seasons in LA, but nothing like the 250 point season he had in Edmonton or whatever it was, you know, like those days were obviously behind him. But I mean, also look at the team that he had with him too. Like, there are so many good players on those Edmonton teams in the early 80s. But I mean, you know, the Kings did well while he was in LA. I think, you know, there's a little bit of bad luck. I don't know. I've never been one to put, just kind of put something on one person's shoulders, you know, like hockey's a team game, you know, there's only so much one person can do, even if you're the best player in the world. I mean, look at the freaking Oilers, you know, I don't have faith that they're going to win anything with Connor McDavid, like the way the team's built now, at least.
Yeah. So. I think, you know, that they're a totally different team in the playoffs, and, you know, yeah, you could shut down McDavid if that's the main focus. But yeah. I guess, like, when you were, what, 12, 13, 14, like, that's when Gretzky was on the team, right?
Yeah, the mid-90s, when he got traded in 88. So, and how long is he there for? 98, 99, I think, something like that. So, yeah, you know, I was an early teenager, and you know, it was a fun time. Like, there was, once Gretzky got traded, there was a buzz in the town for sure. You know, the Kings became the it team. That's when you started seeing a lot of celebrities go to games, and it was the place to be seen, you know. I don't know how much of that was just because Gretzky was one of the biggest names in sports, and that's what LA loves. They love big names, but also winning, those two things, you know. If you don't have either of those, likely your arena is going to be a ghost town, but that's the nature of LA sports.
I guess my question was, like, since you were already a fan before he got there, like, yeah, did you jump on the Gretzky wagon, or were you,
well,
just like,
yeah, of course.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, who wouldn't, you know, you're already a fan of this team, and you know, it's like a little kid right now. If they were, I don't know what teams, say the Coyotes, like right now, like, this little kid is a fan of them, but then say in 2 or 3 years, Austin Matthews comes to town. Like, of course you're going to jump on Austin Matthews. You know, he's one of the most electrifying players in the game. So that's what, especially kids are drawn to, you know, they're drawn to those highlight reel players.
Yeah. Superstars. Yeah, for sure.
The guys that can imitate in street hockey, or, you know, you score a goal and you pretend that you're freaking Wayne Gretzky or whoever, you know. It's a little hard when you're a kid to say, Luc Robitaille. You know, that's a hard name to pronounce for a Southern California kid.
I did know how to spell Gretzky at an early age. that was and like Lemieux. So like some of those like names that, you know, are there's some consonants and vowels in places in that you wouldn't really think of as a young kid, and I prided myself on knowing that.
I'm just thinking right now, like, I don't even know, like, I'm trying to spell Lemieux without looking at it on the internet, and I don't remember if it's like IE or EI. So I know it's LEM. I want to say it's LE. No, because it's only seven letters, right? Shit. Oh boy. This is bad.
We're not a spelling or sometimes it's questionable for a hockey podcast.
Now you got me questioning it.
L-E-M-I-E-U-X,
right?
Yeah, UX.
It's on my brain because of our boy Brendan Lemieux.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, let's talk about that because that's kind of a hot topic right now, right? Because there was a whole biting incident, right?
Yeah, he bit Tkachuk.
So how do you feel about that?
I don't like it. I'm not a fan. When they traded for him, I was like, "What? Why are we trading for this guy?" I mean, I get it. Like, he's sandpaper and grit and whatever. And you know, when the Kings were like going through their losing streak after their winning streak, he was kind of the only spark plug. But I don't know. I'm not a big fan of him personally.
And that's Claude Lemieux's son, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, and I heard, you know, Claude Lemieux, we were still kind of young when he was at his heyday, too. But I remember him having kind of a reputation as being kind of
a slime ball. He bit someone, too.
Yeah.
Like, that, I saw a tweet that was like, they're the first father-son team in NHL history to get suspended for biting.
Oh, my God.
That's just absurd. Oh, my God. I love it. Yeah, man, that's just, it's just wild to me. Cool. You know what? Real quick, let's just kind of go back in time and let's talk cup years, man.
Sure.
Because I'm sure you remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. Did you get an opportunity to go to at that point it was the Staples Center, right? So did you have an opportunity to go to any of those cup games or anything like that during the?
I didn't go to any of the cup games. I went to games on the run. In both years, I went. I think I just went to first round games. I went when they played Vancouver in 2012, and then I went when I actually went when they lost. When they were down, the game they went down 3-1 to San Jose before the reverse sweep.
Yep,
and that was dire. Me and my buddy Brian, we were just there, just like, all right, this is it, like, you know, because the Kings were winning that game, and then San Jose came back and won it. I think in overtime. If it wasn't overtime, it was like super late in the game. And it was just like, oh man. All right. Well, they can't win that game. They're not winning this series. No one comes back from 3-1 or 3-0. It wasn't even 3-1. It was 3-0.
Yeah, it was 3-0. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then they came back and did it. Bless their hearts. 2012, when they won, I was sitting on my coffee table in my apartment in Redondo Beach. And it's still pretty early because since it was a cup final against the East Coast team, they started the game early. So
yeah,
it was super early. I think it was like 6 p.m. or something like or 7 p.m. the game was done by. But yeah, that's super cool because where I lived, in the area that I lived is where all the Kings players live. They all live in Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach. And we knew like the little bars that they love to go to. They love to go to this one in Hermosa Beach called the North End. And my dad is actually really good friends with the bartender there. So he knew the cup was coming there that night. So like we like went and just like posted out at the bar. And then as they were like, they started to come in and bring the cup in, and they were like kicking people out, like, all right, private event. And I was just kind of like hanging like in the corner, like, nope. And my dad's buddy, Ron, he knew like Jared Stoll and Matt Green and stuff because they were locals at that bar. So it's just like, no, you're good. Like, I was like, all right, cool. And then one of my good friends, I won't say his name to not embarrass him, but he was, you know, very not sober And he wandered out of the bar when they were kicking everyone out. And then I'm like, where are you? And he's like, I'm outside. They won't let me back in. I'm like, oh, man. Me being a good friend, I was like, all right, we got to go.
Oh, wow. You away. Tom, there's no chance I would leave.
So as we're going out, they're bringing the cup in. Like Marco Sturm was there. Or was it Marco Sturm? I think it was, yeah. And then, but my buddy, he's a sales rep in like the surf, skate, snow industry. And we worked at surf shops and stuff in Hermosa Beach. And he knew Derek Armstrong and Joe Corvo and Jarrett Stoll, like personally, like really good. And so like, he was trying to get Jarrett Stoll to like, let him in, and slowly he's like, I can't do anything. They're not letting anyone in. And I was like, you bastard. But it's all good.
Now, staying on the topic of those cup runs, you know, as a diehard fan, like a true fan that's been through it, you know, since LA is like you mentioned, can become a big ticket event, you know, with celebrities wanting to go and like the casual fan that just like, oh, they're in the championship. Let me go and pay, you know, $4,000 to go to this game, or like the blue collar fan can't do that. Like, you know, for us as Islander fans, you know, we were just in the Eastern Conference final, but I knew lots of my friends that just were like, yeah, I got tickets to the game. Like, yeah, they were like $200, $250, but that's,
if they went to the cup final, people would have come out of the woodworks, you know.
I don't know, like Long Island where it is, you know, we have notably two celebrities that are fans of the Islanders, and that's pretty much it. Like Ralph Macchio.
Yeah.
And Kevin Conley. Yeah. Like that's it. So like,
I guess it's kind of the same with like the Ducks, you know, like the Ducks were so good for so long. And, you know, when they went to the cup run, I was like, if you want to go to the game, you could go to the game. It wasn't that hard. You know, you might have to spend a little bit of money, but you're not like mortgaging your house or anything. But yeah, it was definitely different when the Kings went to the game. I had friends who paid some crazy prices, like especially in 2012. 2014 was a little easier just because they'd already done it. But yeah, it got crazy for a while. I think it's died down quite a bit since the Kings have kind of been not great. And I mean, the thing about LA too is at the time, that was when the Lakers were like on their decline and the Kings were going up. So you had all these like Lakers fans who were like, well, I want to watch a winning team. So they started becoming Kings fans and like filling the stadium. And like, so I mean, before the cup run, it wasn't like Staples Center had good attendance, but not like hundreds of straight sellouts or whatever, you know? And so that was another thing that kind of just happened at the same time that made it harder to go to games, because you had all these other people who were paying courtside ticket prices for Lakers games who were like, well, I'll just go to King games now. I want to watch the winning team.
Nah, I get it. I remember 2014 very vividly because a lot of friends of mine back home on the island were Ranger fans. So I remember there's this little venue on Long Island that my buddy kind of operated. He called it the wood shop, and it was literally his dad owned a wood shop and had this like big room that could fit probably, you know, like 125 people. They built a small stage. So like one day we were hanging out there and it was like, I think like a show might've even been going on and game five was happening. And I just remember, like, you know, the Islanders and Rangers have such a deep rivalry, but I remember feeling like just so heartbroken for Lundqvist. Like, that's all I could think about. And like that game, you guys battered him, man. That was 2-0. I think he like 51 shots or something. That whole series, man. Like the Rangers didn't do shit for poor Hank, man. I think
it's just like 2012 where, you know, against the Devils, that was because of Brodeur, you know.
Yeah.
Both teams were there because of their goalies.
Oh, yeah. But it's just like to think about the fact that, like, you know, over those five, you know, cup final games, like, I think, like, you guys got almost 200 shots on Lundqvist.
Probably.
They were a high
shot team for sure. Low percentage of scoring, but yeah, high shots.
But I'll, you know, that team was a hell of a team to watch. And, you know, you don't always like get opportunities to see these really good fluid teams, you know, like kind of come out of the West, especially when you're like an East Coast guy and you're just always watching East Coast hockey. So yeah. it was definitely really cool to see. But you know, I
think as hockey fans, we were like pretty lucky to kind of see like in that 3 to 5 year span, just mm-hmm. like how dominant both the Kings and Blackhawks were.
Yeah.
Like that year, that the conference final, the Kings and Blackhawks, that was just like, I think that was better series than the Stanley Cup final. That was such a like just gauntlet for them. Like, and either team, whoever came out of that was beating the Rangers. Like, there's mm-hmm. no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a heck of a series to watch. Very stressful. Very, very stressful as a Kings fan.
Now, Ian, you also, you know, and I know this because we chatted, but you know, earlier on you mentioned that you're in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how is that watching Kings games? Because now they're starting what, like
hard.
9 for you?
Yeah. It's hard. You know, I'm pushing 40 and it's like getting motivated to start watching a hockey game at 9:30 is just like, let's see, what time's my daughter gonna wake up?
Yep, yeah,
maybe between 5:30 and 7. Yeah, so it's tough. Oftentimes, I'll start a game and then I don't finish many games. It's like 11:30, 12 by the time the game ends. It's rough. Like, and if I couldn't imagine being one more time zone over.
Oh yeah.
You know? Oh god, so, yeah.
Like, I get it, like how there's an East Coast bias, because it's just like it's so hard watching West Coast games. Like, I get it. Like, I guess if it's your job, it's a little easier. But yeah. Hold on, my wife's texting me.
Yeah, so I even like when the Islanders are playing those West Coast games, yeah. it's
tough. It's funny because I don't even watch Preds games though. Like,
well, I was gonna get into that, you know, since you are kind of in a booming hockey market, you haven't taken it on at all.
Nope, I haven't watched a single Preds game since I moved here on TV. Oh, wow. I mean, I've been to a handful of games. Me and Jake have gone to games, and man, Bridgestone is such a fun arena to go to. Like, and especially coming from like Staples Center, like it's just so different, like of an atmosphere. It's just always buzzing. Like, all got to give, you know, Preds fans credit for that. Like, that place is always rocking. But yeah, I mean, nothing against the Preds. I'm just like not invested in them. And I'm even at a point where it's like, it's really hard for me to like just watch my own team. You know, like I put my wife through so many years of like, we're watching Kings games. We're watching Kings games. This is what we're doing. And she's just like, no. We're not doing that anymore. And it's like, that's fair. Like, yeah. I get it. Like, I'm not going to make you sit here and watch Preds games who, like, you know, I'm in it. Like, I can name you the whole Kings farm system, you know, but like, it's like, I don't know who the freaking 13th forward on the Predators is.
Yeah.
I go to games and they score a goal. I'm like, what the hell's that?
But I mean, it is, you
know, the big name, but
it's an awesome place to catch a game, and I truly recommend it to any hockey fan to at least.
For sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And especially just because Nashville is such a cool city to come to, too. Like, come here. Well, try and come in the spring if, like, they're in the playoffs, or, like, the early fall when the season starts. Maybe not in January, February. Well, you guys are used to it on the East Coast, but, yeah, it weather gets a little too chilly, I think, to like enjoy the city too much.
Yeah, I can't say really anything bad about Nashville other than the country music, and like obviously that's why most people go there.
And yeah, my wife, she loves all that kind of country music, and I'm not into it, but whatever, I'll tolerate it, it's fine.
Yeah, I guess I just like didn't do my research. Like, I knew like country music's big there. I guess I just didn't know it was that big. because
yeah, you walk down, you leave a game, and it spits you right out on to Broadway, and you go down the street, and there's what 20 bars that are three stories that are just each story has a different band playing. You
exactly.
Know? I mean, they're not all country, like that. It's a lot of cover bands, really, to be honest. So, I mean, I've heard my share of Blink 182 songs in those bars, you know, like
it's funny to think about like a band like Free Throw coming out of Nashville, right? And like not like having a country record yet.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's one coming. I'm sure crazy Corey Castro is just going to be like, guys, we're going to do this country record, and it's still going to be in my weird twinkly tuning. And it's going to be
what's funny is be great. So many punk and hardcore bands and metal bands, like people live here now.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you look at like Tom from Stray or like some of the Counterparts guys live here, and like the drummer Slipknot lives here.
Oh yeah, and like Ryan from Yellow Card, Alex from Conditions, like
yeah,
the list goes on and on.
Glory,
yeah,
Chris Caraba, freak, who else? Yeah. One of the guys from Hawthorne Heights lives here now. Arun from Saves the Day.
Yeah.
Joe from Amity Affliction / Defeater. He just moved down to Chattanooga, but you know that's only a couple hours away. Yeah. So.
I get it. I mean, like, you know, from everything that
nice
I've heard,
it's a nice place to live.
They say it is. You know, I have a buddy from work that.
You guys are in what, Carolina?
Well, Mikey's in Charlotte. I'm in Orlando. So
okay.
Yeah, but you know, I've got a buddy from work that grew up in Nashville, and he was just like, "Oh, I love it. I would go back in a heartbeat if I could," and all that kind of stuff. I think it's just a very, you know, it's a culturally rich place to be. And from, you know, from what I've understood, it's not crazy expensive. And there's a lot of,
I don't know things about that.
Well, it's not like, yeah, I mean, at least compared to like me moving from LA.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, you well, know, houses, yeah. You know, houses in my neighborhood I grew up in are over $1 million, you know, can never afford to buy there in my life. Yeah. But you know, I don't come from family money, so it's not, you know, no help on that side.
Yeah.
But then it's like, you know, we come here and me and my wife are able to buy a house for under $300,000. And it's
incredible.
It's a really nice house on like a half an acre of land, you know? It's like,
oh, it's awesome.
And I mean, granted, we don't live in Nashville. Like, we're like 20 to 30 minutes outside of it in this town, Hendersonville, which is like where Johnny Cash lived. So, I mean, it's a little more suburbia. I guess it's probably similar to like Long Island compared to New York or whatever, you know.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, the cost of living here is just, at least compared to LA, which is one of the most insane places in the world or in the country at least. It's way more affordable, but I don't know about compared to like Orlando or North Carolina or whatever.
Now, so. I guess what was the decision process moving from LA to Nashville? I know like Pure Noise is slowly shifting their headquarters there. So like,
no, we're here.
Oh, you are here.
Yeah.
So like,
I moved here. Yeah. Me and my wife, we moved here 3 years ago. You know, just shortly after we had our daughter, you know, my wife was on maternity leave and she was just kind of like, you know, we could have lived in LA forever just as a couple and been like, whatever, we're renting. We live 2 miles from the beach. It's freaking awesome living here. Like, are you kidding me? But you know, it's cheesy, but when you have a kid, your priorities shift a little bit. And it was like, you start thinking about like, well, where we went to high school, we want her to go to one of the high schools we went to. And just to go there, it's like $1.5 million house, or even just renting an apartment is like $2,500-3 grand a month, and it's just like, that's crazy. Like, not doing that makes no sense. So you know, my wife, she got into it deep on Zillow and just started looking around the country and all this kind of stuff. I think there's an Instagram page she followed that just showed all these houses in like Connecticut or something, and she was like, oh my god, like the other side of the country is just so beautiful and so much cheaper. And so somehow she landed on Nashville as an option just because she loves country music. And she was like, that sounds like such a cool place to live. And then she did more and more research. And somehow we ended up on Hendersonville because it has a lake and her dad was moving with us, and you know, we're so used to the ocean, and he's a fisherman, so we're like, oh, we need to be by a body of water.
There you go.
So that's basically how we landed here. I mean, awesome. And the town we live in has stellar schools, like, you know, Taylor Swift went to the high school down the street from me and stuff. So
that's all you needed to say.
Yeah. She funds a lot of it, like the town. Like there was a big flood like a little over 10 years ago in Nashville, and she paid for like so much of like the town's repair. And it's like, you know, I'm not a big fan of her music or whatever, but it's like, respect that. You know.
Yeah. Speaking of Taylor Swift, it was just like a little funny kind of thing, I guess, when Red came out, I guess when they pressed it, 45 as opposed to 33, yeah. And all of these like novice, like record player, like throwing them, you know, their records on Crosley's and
sounds
stuff.
Sounds like just a chipmunk.
Like, yeah. Right. Like, I don't get it. Why does this sound so bad? It's like, just move the lever. Just move the lever. You'll be fine.
I'm surprised any of those people actually had a record player to listen to it on, to be honest.
Yeah, right. Like I said, it's probably one of those things where it's like, you know.
I mean, there's Crosley's that's got a 45 switch on it.
Yep, exactly. And there are people, I get it. Like I used to be one of those people. Like when I first was collecting records, like I kind of had a 5-year period where I was collecting, then I stopped, then I started again. But when I was first collecting records, like I was just buying them just as like keepsakes. Like I wasn't really listening to them, but now I, you know, any record that I buy, I try to spin at least once, and there's ones that I've spun a couple of times. But so we've been going about an hour 15. So I guess we'll just do kind of a couple final questions, and then we'll wrap it up and let you get to the rest of your day. So the one last question I have, and it's going to be a record question, and it's going to be specifically about a record that I have in my spreadsheet that has a question mark in the number pressed category. So I'm going to need you to tell me how many there are, or else I'm going to lose my mind. Okay. So now I know it was a repress, and I know you said you're not completely stellar on those, but looks like you guys did a Bloom and Breathe Gates record on like an Electric Blue.
Oof.
Geez. Don't know how many there are, but
this was even before my time, bro.
Oh God. All right. Well,
but let me see if I can help you.
Excellent. Excellent. See, this is what, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for coming on.
Tom could have saved this question for after or before. He wants to do it in the middle of the interview. Cause
no,
that's how Tom goes.
No, it's good. It's good. And while you're searching that,
that was one that, yeah, we repressed that even before I started, so it's not in any of my emails.
That's fine. No worries. I'll pester you about it at some point later.
You know what? I feel like this question like popped up at some point, and like I did figure it out. So I'll get that for you.
No problem. But in truth, like I said, you know, and I'm not sitting here trying to, you know, be a Pure Noise fanboy, but I mean, it's like of all of the records I have, like in terms of really cool variants, it like you guys are kind of like the front runner on it. I mean, like, you know, and trust me, there's a lot of cool stuff out there. You know, Run for Cover's done some cool stuff. You know, like Wax Bodega and like all that kind of stuff. You know, they're doing some really cool stuff. But honestly, when I look at like all the records I have and I look at the coolest variants, it's really you guys are doing it. So, you know, you being the kind of spearheading that process is really cool. So it was awesome to get to talk to you about it. But
yeah, no problem, man. I try and, you know, I come from that world, and, you know, we put in our, like, that's what our roots are, you know, it's just like, that's, and we know what our label's bread and butter is and stuff, you know, like we've become the label we are. And a lot of it's because of, you know, vinyl pressings.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, that's just, it's in our blood. And, by the way, I think, never mind. Disregard. I was looking at the pressing info, and then I misread it.
That's so cool.
I will, like, find that for you.
One of these days. One of these days. It's not the best. I've been like hounding the fine people in The World Is a Beautiful Place about this like translucent purple iteration of their new record that's coming out that I can't find pressing info anywhere. And like, it keeps telling me it's limited and I'm like, well, how limited? And no one's answering me. And it's just blowing my mind right now. But, you know, these are the kind of things that, that you do when you're,
it'll come out eventually.
Yeah. But, no, man, I, you know, honestly, like I said, kudos to, you know, to what you do. You know, we hear, we love Pure Noise. We're, huge fans, and all the stuff that, that, you know, you guys are putting out is awesome. And the packaging is awesome and everything is great. So yeah, no, awesome. But, I'm sure you got one last question here to plug into, Mikey.
Yeah. I just want to know, are we expecting another VG Pure Noise collab anytime soon?
Nothing like officially locked in, but I mean, I think it's safe to assume that something will come eventually. I mean, we love those guys. We're super close with their creative director, Vincent. He plays on our pond hockey team. So, you know, we're super tight with them. Jake's really good friends with Hammer. So, you know, we just got a great relationship with them. So I'm sure one of our next big albums that it makes sense for, I don't see a world why, you know, why we wouldn't do it.
Yeah. As hockey and music fans, I get super jacked up when I see those, like the 4 year strong Brain Pain collab was just so well done. And even like the Seaway one that you mentioned, it was just awesome. The jersey and everything's awesome. So,
yeah, I mean, they're great people. We love them. You know, we have two of our custom Pure Noise jerseys done through them, and they make great products, and they're just great people. So despite being Mets fans.
I just realized I totally dropped the ball because I have that Pure Noise VG jersey and I totally should have worn it. And I just totally forgot.
Rookie move.
Rookie move.
At least you're wearing the VG sweater.
Yep. And hat. I rep VG as much as I can. Those guys are awesome.
You're going for it. And then real quick question, just because you've, you know, you toured with Finch and all that stuff. Any chance like Nate or R2K happen to be like hockey fans?
I don't think they're sports fans of any kind.
This is honestly, one of the things that I've found out about doing this podcast is like, you have these like flashes of brilliance where you're like, oh, maybe these guys are hockey fans. And then you find out like either people just love hockey to death and you're like, oh, awesome. Or like, they're like, nah, you know, I used to play Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey, but like that's about it. And you're like, oh, well.
It'd be a pretty slim. I can't think of any of the guys in that band that would care about any sort of sport. I mean, Nate, especially. No, he's not. He's probably the last person in the world who'd care about hockey. Maybe Randy, but I don't know. I can't remember any specifics. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen either of those guys. Maybe Randy. I think he lives in LA now, so who knows.
Sometimes you just got to try to go to the source if you can, you know.
Yeah.
Uncover. I think we only got like one Pure Noise artist that we haven't gotten to yet, and that's probably, we'll save him for episode 200, and that would be Kellen.
Oh, I'm sure you could get him. I don't see why not.
Yeah, we'll save it for a big episode.
You want me to poke him for it?
Poke him. Poke the bear, man. Poke them. Let's do it. And then I also know the drug. I still haven't been able to get them on, but I think Pat from Drug Church, I think he said there, some of them are like blues fans or stuff. So
blues,
I don't know. Yeah. I think I hit them up once on,
aren't they like originally from Buffalo?
I think they are, but I think like they said, or like Albany, they've got something, like a Sabres, a Bruins and a blues fan in the band. But like, I was never able to kind of expound upon that because, you know, you know how things go. Sometimes you know, stuff gets lost in the inboxes and stuff, but yeah, this is awesome. I mean, it really was super cool to get to chat with you. And like I said, I could nerd out with you for another 3 or 4 hours about all this kind of stuff, but I won't, just because that doesn't make for a compelling podcast, and you're like a dad and you got dad stuff to do. So
I'm sure people are zoned out already.
Oh, I'm positively. people are probably like, they're going to like tune in and be like, oh, they've got Ian, the vinyl guy, and they're going to be like, oh shit, Tom's just going to blab for an hour and a half, which is essentially what happened, but that's okay. But we really do appreciate
you
taking
the time. We enjoyed ourselves.
Hell yeah, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your Saturday to be on here with us. Yeah. If you want to just real quick before we go, I don't know if you want to like blast your socials or anything that you might want to, you know, talk about or you know, give some highlights to or anything like that just before we let you go, but floor is yours if you'd like to.
I don't think anyone really cares about my dad life. It's not that interesting. My daughter loves princesses. That's about it. I make some hot sauces. I do that.
Ooh, shit. That's awesome.
I got those for sale on my Etsy. Those links are in my profiles. So
cool. Awesome.
Yeah, that's about it. Other than that, buy more records.
Hell yeah.
Long buy more
Pure Noise records.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Well, thank you again, Ian, so much for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, good rest of your weekend. And you I'm sure the next record that comes out, I'm just going to like blast you and be like, the white. How many is the white?
You got my email.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. Ian, thank you so much.
All right.
Bar Down Breakdown, the Hockey Podcast Network. Thank you so much for being with us. And we will see you next time. Cheers.
Peace.
Thanks, guys.